Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Chris Gasper. Welcome to Season Ticket for Wednesday, January 3rd. We have Globe sports columnist Dan Shaughnessy with us here today, and we're going to go around the horn with Dan. We're going to touch on the Celtics, their big game with the Cleveland Cavaliers. If we have some time, maybe we'll ask Dan about the Boston Red Sox. Remember them? They still have not done anything in this offseason. They haven't done anything in the new year either. But we're going to start it here, Dan, with the Celtics. Big game tonight at TD Garden against the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James in town, but more important for Celtics fans, Isaiah Thomas returns to TD Garden for the first time since he was traded in the offseason. That mega trade that brought Kyrie Irving here and really shook up the NBA. And Isaiah Thomas made his debut last night, Dan, and he looked pretty good to me.
He did. I caught a little bit of that. I think he got 17 points in 19 minutes. He looked more comfortable on the floor than I thought. It's going to be interesting how they distribute the ball with, you know, they have so many weapons there, so many guys who are used to having the ball, you know, Dwayne Wade, even J.R. Smith, obviously LeBron. LeBron passes a lot, I know. I'm curious to see, you know, when Isaiah is really healthy and playing big minutes, how it goes with sharing the basketball with LeBron James and Isaiah. But unfortunately, tonight we're not going to see him. I'm mad about that. This is, like, ridiculous. They should have had Isaiah play tonight, not last night. Last night they had an easy win at home against Portland. That's when you rest him. I understand not playing him back-to-back, but they really made a soft entry for him rather than a rigorous entry. And the way he's been spouting off since he left here, angry at Danny, hating on everybody, not wanting a tribute. I mean, play tonight, not last night.
Well, the reason he's not playing tonight is, look, he just made his season debut. The guy's coming off a major hip injury. A lot of people didn't even think he'd be back by this point in the season. There was talk he might not be back until April or May. So they have to protect him with that hip injury.
You mentioned. Stop you, though.
Why?
Why couldn't he have played tonight and not last night?
Because he wants to be at his best when he plays here. You just, all the stuff you mentioned about how much it means to him, how upset he was when he was dealt from the Celtics, that's why he doesn't want to play. Like, he played last night. He's on a minutes restriction. He played well. I mean, he had 17 points. He shot 3 of 8 from 3. He was 6 of 12 from the field. And he was really happy after the game with the way he played.
Of course.
But, look, the reality is he's not 100%. So if you were playing against your former employer and you wanted to show them they made a huge mistake letting you go, wouldn't you want to be at your absolute best?
That's too much of the diva thing in him. Competitively, they needed him more tonight than they needed him last night. They're on the road against the Celtics. If you got to play one out of two games, you put him in this game where they need the help off the bench they could have given him. Again, it's just catering to the star in this case. I just thought it was cheesy and a bad look for him.
See, I completely disagree because I think there's a health situation here. You have to remember, for the Cavaliers, it's not just about Isaiah Thomas being healthy. It's about they need Isaiah Thomas to help them recruit LeBron James. So if you play Isaiah Thomas, if he goes out against the Celtics, and because he's all riled up.
So you didn't want him all riled up for his debut?
No, of course, selfishly, of course, we want to see him. But for Cleveland, I don't think it's catering to him as a diva. Yeah. I think it's a situation where they're looking at the long term and saying, if he re-injures himself because he's trying to prove something to Danny Ainge, how does that help us, the Cavaliers? And then LeBron never gets to see him, and LeBron walks away. Like, if LeBron's gone, it's over. Like, okay. They're done.
Yes, I understand that. So we'll just agree to disagree on that and move on.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine by me. I like you, however, am disappointed that he won't play in this game. And it's interesting that he told the Globe's Gary Washburn that he doesn't want the tribute. The Celtics do
Why not? Video tributes. Ridiculous. They come back here February 11th. Well, that's when Paul Pierce is having his number retired. That's ridiculous, so you can't do it then. And again, cherry-picking when they're going to have the video tribute. Tonight is the night to do that. This is more diva stuff, more catering. You know what, Isaiah? You are a footnote in Celtic history. That's what you are. It was a nice 2.5 years. Thank you very much. You're on your fourth team now. Good luck with it. But you are not Paul Pierce or Kevin Garnett or even Ray Allen. You know, you were the best player here for a couple of years when the team was transitioning. Thank you for your service. See you later. And we'll give you the tribute when we feel like it, not when you dictate.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I do think he has an inflated sense of his importance in Celtic history.
The Freak's truck, go away.
I mean, he certainly was, you know, look, he was instrumental in them being able to turn it around and get to a point where they were a desirable destination. Like, Al Horford's not here. Gordon Hayward said that Isaiah Thomas recruited him. They did win 53 games last year, the number one seed. He helped turn it around. But when you look at Celtic history, and I know you know it better than I do, Dan, so I don't have to tell you, but you're right. I mean, you didn't win any championships here. You never even went to a finals. You were here for a couple years. Last year was a great season. It was one of the great seasons individually, I think, a Celtic has had, you know, 28.9 points per game. But the Celtics are not an organization that measures themselves that way. They measure it by championships. Like, it's not a coincidence that no Celtic has ever led the league in scoring.
Correct.
Because that's the way they've played. It's not about individual accomplishments. So I totally agree with you there. you know, people bag on the Celtics for the retired numbers that it's too easy, but this tribute thing is worse to me. Like, if there's a Jay Crowder tribute, like, I'm going to lose it.
There's no reason for that.
I mean, the guy was a nice role player here. He played hard, and I get that part of it, but do we need a tribute for every single guy that wore the uniform?
The Red Sox set the bar on this thing. I think they had a Johnny Gomes tribute the year after he came back. I mean, you know, the Dr. Charles thing, loving every guy that comes back and the whole thing. So, yeah, we've got too many of those things going on now. The Isaiah thing, it is merited. It'll be good when it happens. It should have happened tonight. Jay Crowder, let's not even. I know you want to go there for other reasons, but we.
Not really. I just was mentioning it because I'm thinking without Isaiah.
Well,
without the Isaiah tribute, like, they're going to do something.
If you don't want to go there for Crowder, can I go there with Crowder saying he hopes he gets cheers tonight? Because from what he remembers, it's not unusual for Celtic fans to cheer out of town players. I.e. Gordon Hayward.
Oh, he's still mad about that?
He's still mad about that. And again, talk about overinflating who you are, what you meant to this franchise. He's not even a footnote. You know, he was underrated when he got here, immediately became overrated, and just butthurt about getting traded. Nice, you know, role player for a while here, move on. And he's now trying to talk about getting cheers tonight from the Garden crowd because he's still... They hurt his feelings last year when they cheered for Gordon Hayward. Give me a break. These guys, what world are they living in?
Yeah, Crowder was another. I love the way he played. Here's the thing on those guys. Isaiah Thomas, and I love the way he played too. There was there were two sides to the coin when it came to those guys. Because they were guys that had been underrated and had been discounted and disregarded and were not really valued is the right word,
sure,
by other teams. I think they came here with a chip on their shoulder, and it helped them, and it helped the Celtics. The flip side of that, though, was that when they did have success, they just could not resist telling you about it and how great it was. And some of this commentary that you have to deal with, again, Jay Crowder with the whole thing when Gordon Hayward came here last year and Celtics fans cheered him.
He's still talking about it.
And, you know, it's unbelievable to me that Crowder, and look, Crowder landed in a good situation.
Sure.
The one thing I will say, though, to Crowder, is that this trade went down for him when he had just lost his mom. That's really hard. That's hard for anybody.
Okay.
So obviously, condolences. And I think that situation, just given the timing of it, given what he gave to the Celtics here and then losing your mom, he's going to be emotional about the trade.
Okay.
And you know what? I grant him that.
All right, we'll cut
I grant him,
slack him on
that degree of it.
We'll cut him some
for
slack.
That. When you look at these two teams, I think this is interesting, Dan, because after that 16-game winning streak for the Celtics, they're only 14-8.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. I mean, they're 30-10. They're still the top seed in the East. Toronto's between the Celtics and the Cavs. The Cavs are 25-12, 3.5 games back. But in a lot of ways, I think the team with more to prove tonight is the Celtics. Because after that winning streak, as I mentioned, I mean, they've been good, but not as good as you would think they should be, or not as good as they were during that winning streak, when you're saying, all right, maybe the Celtics and not the Cavaliers should be the favorites in the East.
Well, yeah, there's this whole notion that their destiny is to meet in the conference finals again last year. That was... They got to it last year. It could happen again. I think that Toronto, I think Washington for sure, Detroit could have something to say about that. But Boston and Cleveland have the two best rosters at this point. So you look ahead and you think that's where it's going. I was there opening night in Cleveland. Hayward gets hurt. We kind of forgot about the game after that. And the Celtics put up a nice effort, did not win that game. They now have two fewer losses than the Cavs have. That's good going in. I still like the Cavs in a 7-game series against the Boston Celtics because they just have so many guys. I watched a little bit of them last night. And you see, you know, J.R. Smith still sitting there and Korver coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, we know, you know, Love and LeBron. I forgot about Dwayne Wade being alive, and he's out there with the ball in his hands a lot. So, I mean, it's a – and Tristan Thompson's back playing. They are formidable. They are better than your team. They have been better than your team. And do not assume that you will automatically get to them in the finals. You know, take it one game at a time, and this is one game tonight.
Yeah, and I think when I look at the Celtics, that they – you look at Cleveland. Cleveland's getting Isaiah Thomas back. That's a huge, huge addition to their team. And obviously, as we've mentioned, he's not going to play tonight. But, man, he looked good. And he looked like the Isaiah of old in his debut against the Portland Trail Blazers. I look at the Celtics. Look, maybe they get Gordon Hayward back at the end of the year. But who knows what he is after that broken ankle. And they're one rotation guy short to me. Whether it's like Lou Williams or Tyreke Evans, they need another scorer, particularly off the bench. And you really see it when Marcus Morris isn't healthy. And I think that knee is going to be an issue for him all year long. So when you look at Cleveland and the Celtics, I think Cleveland, especially now that IT is back, they have more options to score the basketball, and they have a deeper rotation.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, Celtics have that exemption. I think they'll use that in the next 2 months, and Danny will get an $8 million score to come in here. Somebody can plug in like you're talking about. And you have to watch out for things like Morris's knee and things, that because they are not that deep. And the Celtics don't have the depth that the Cavs have. They are younger and faster, but they do not have the depth that Cleveland has on the bench.
So just to talk about Isaiah Thomas here, how do you think he will be received by Celtics fans? Because regardless of what his status is in Celtic history, I don't think you can deny, Dan, that he did form an emotional bond with the fans and with the city.
The little guy.
And yeah, and look, yes. Boston's a sports, we love the little guy, you know, whether it's Doug Flutie, Brad Marchand, Dustin Pedroia, we tend to embrace those little guys. And Isaiah Thomas was embraced here, no question about it. And I think a lot of people respect him for what he did in the playoffs last year. His sister passes away right before the playoffs start. He still went out there and played. He played really well. He had the game against Washington where he lost the tooth.
He had the
53-point game against the Wizards in game two of that series, which, I mean, they don't win that series without him. Yeah. So regardless of his status in Celtics history, and I think that he's put himself on a pedestal that he doesn't deserve when it comes to the parquet, but the reality is this guy did give his heart and soul while he was here.
Absolutely, and that's a very enthusiastic, forgiving crowd. He will get a huge ovation tonight when he is introduced. They should be showing the tribute tonight, whatever. But yes, and he's very worthy of the fans' love, and it will be unanimous. You won't hear any negativity there tonight.
That being said, though, do you feel like they're better off with Kyrie Irving? Because I do.
Oh, I mean, everybody knows that. And fortunately, Celtic fans are smart enough. They know enough basketball. It took like 2-3 weeks, but people now, the idea that it's an either-or thing, no one's going there. And this, you know, Irving is younger, 6 inches taller, better. He's a superstar. Isaiah's a star.
Yeah, and that's why the Celtics made the deal. I mean, and I remember talking to Steve Pagliuca, Celtics co-owner, and he said, look, Isaiah should take it as a badge of honor that he was able to be traded for a player like Kyrie Irving, that type of transcendent player. I know that's not the way IT looks at it, but I think to a degree that's the way the Celtics look at it, that, look, this was a mutually beneficial relationship. Your profile in the NBA increased, Isaiah. You helped us bring in a guy like Kyrie Irving. It worked for both sides. So we'll see. Isaiah says there's no hard feelings.
There is hard feelings. He's on a mission.
I agree. That's easy to say when you know you're not going to play. But February 11th, I think he's coming here and he's coming for blood. So it should be really interesting for that game. And it certainly will be interesting tonight at the Garden. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, more with Dan Shaughnessy. We'll ask him about the Patriots playoff run. Does he see a line of tomato cans there for the Patriots? We'll ask him that. And if we have some time, we'll also get to the Red Sox as well. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Tickets, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back now with Globe columnist Dan Shaughnessy. Dan, when you look at the AFC playoff field for the Patriots, you're the man who coined tomato cans. Yeah. Do you see tomato cans or legitimate contenders?
Cans. The Patriots are not that good, okay? And I say that every year, right, until the parade goes by my house. I
mean, 13-3, not that good.
I mean, I get that. But there's no great teams, and they are not a great team either. They are most likely the best of a bunch of okay teams.
The least flawed.
And that's what we're facing here. I still have a lot of faith that Pittsburgh has as much or more talent than the Patriots. I believe they do. It's a mental thing with them. They couldn't, with the game in their hand, in their own building, they still couldn't get it done a few weeks ago. So you have that. But the field in the AFC, in my view, did not have six playoff teams this year. They are submitting six. The rules say you have to do that, and therefore you end up with the Bills, this stooge team that now doesn't have their best player. McCoy's not going to play, and they're playing Jacksonville, which I know they have a really good defense.
Their defense is great.
I know.
And Bortles played well down the stretch.
Stop with Bortles. Don't try it.
Hold on. I'm not a believer in Bortles. I'm just stating the facts. I'm just telling you. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to just say Jacksonville like they're the Jacksonville of the last couple of years. They submitted a 16-game resume. Do I think they can win in the playoffs? I do not. But if they lose in the playoffs, it's not going to be because they are the completely inept Jacksonville Jaguars of the last couple of years. It will be because their quarterback play is not good enough. But, I mean, their defense is for real.
Okay, I believe you. I do. I truly believe you. So you have them. You have the Bills. So we assume that Jacksonville comes out of that one. The other game, I'm sorry, the Titans, it's just, you know, it's just bad.
They sort of backed in. I mean, they lost three of their last four. They finally win the last game. Mariota took a step back this year. He threw more interceptions than touchdown passes.
He had 13 touchdown passes and 15 interceptions. That's your playoff quarterback.
Well, here's the thing, right? So I wrote about this in the Globe. The playoff field in the AFC, half the field, right? The quarterbacks have never started a playoff game. Right. So Bortles has never started a playoff game. Yeah. And people don't think he's the answer there. Mariota, as you mentioned, threw 13 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. So is he going to come in here and win? And then you look at Buffalo, Tyrod Taylor, They tried to get rid of that guy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they absolutely.
He lost his job in the last month of the season.
Yeah, you know. So those are the quarterbacks. So, again, it's like setting up the one thing. If you're going to beat the Patriots, I feel like you need to have a quarterback who can, when the money's on the table, go out and execute and make pressure throws. And I don't see that from any of those guys. And so then the question is, we all know Pittsburgh, if that's what it is in the AFC title game. But Kansas City might be the one team that could come in before the AFC title game and win. Obviously, they won the season opener. Still, Alex Smith, only 2-4 in the playoffs. I think it's different beating the Patriots here in September than it is in January. But do you give Kansas City a shot if they come in here in the divisional round?
I think Kansas City and Pittsburgh both have a chance. It would be a game if they came here and played. And that's, I wouldn't say that about the other three if they came here and played a game against the Patriots. So, yes, I will say I don't like Andy Reid with clock management and a close game in Foxborough against Belichick, et cetera, all that stuff. But we know that they have somewhat of a track record. They did win here this year. It's the same guys. So, yes, I'm going to give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, that's true. And we all remember the 2014 game when they got blown out down there.
Trent Dilfer. On to Cincinnati.
Yep, we're on to Cincinnati, Bill said. And then this season opener was a shocker. So a little bit there. But look, Alex Smith, you know, in the playoffs, he's 2-4, and he only has one win in the playoffs with the Chiefs. And you know who he beat? He beat the Houston Texans. And you know who started that game for the Houston Texans?
Please tell me.
Brian Hoyer, the backup quarterback for the Patriots.
And
Hoyer
had picks.
Five turnovers, four interceptions in that game. So even that playoff win in the AFC gets a little bit of an asterisk. Speaking of quarterback play, are you concerned at all about Tom Brady's play here down the stretch, Dan? When you look at the way that he's played, first 10 games of the year, six 300-yard passing games, final six games of the year, no 300-yard passing games.
Well, I think that it's legit to question that. I'm always reluctant to get too deep in it because as soon as you do, he goes out and has one of these great games, and everybody says, Dan, yeah, you know, see, you were wrong. Why'd you ever question our Tom? So, but I think when you hear Charlie Weiss and Troy Brown talking on Comcast last weekend, saying about that they're seeing some things out there, patting the ball, not trusting the receivers.
Because these guys don't get open. That's why he's patting the ball, and he doesn't trust the receivers. They get no separation.
So whether that's Tom, whether it's the team, whatever you're saying, but the passing game is not what it was, what you would like it to be. Gronk's obviously, you know, we don't know what was going on. That Jet game is a tough sample because it's so cold, and whether they had just taken Gronk off the game plan or the double coverage took him out of it, we don't know. He's going to get more weapons back, you know, like two or three of his offensive people
Hogan
are coming
should back be back,
to play.
James White should be back.
So
hopefully
you have
Brock
those
back.
Things. But, yeah, the five picks of the four games leading in and then less than 500 percentage completion against the Jets on a cold day, sure, there's things to look at. But I just think that the first game is going to be so easy for the Patriots when they finally play on the 13th of January that I think that'll right itself. But there's legitimate questions going into that game about his play. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at it, I don't put it all on Tom. I think you can be concerned about the injury stuff because it seems like it was, you know, the last 300-yard game was that Oakland game, and that's where Khalil Mack went at him, and suddenly he's popping up on the injury report with an Achilles, and he's missing practice time. And anybody who knows Tom Brady, you know, missing practice time is not something Tom Brady does voluntarily. He loves to practice. And when Garoppolo was here, he didn't want to give Garoppolo any of those reps. I know it's different with Hoyer, but with Brady's story and the way that he has come up, the fact he always had to fight to get his opportunity, whether it was at Michigan or when he was with the Patriots starting out as a fourth-string guy, he's always treated practice like a game because for much of his career, that was his game. It was his only opportunity. So I'm a little concerned for him to miss practice, and then he's on this injury report before the Jets game. Now the left shoulder's on there. I think he's banged up. I think that the receivers are not getting separation. Look, word is out on the Patriots. You play them man-to-man. You play this cover one with the robber in the middle of the field and sort of playing like a short center field, and you have the deep guy playing the deep center field, the one safety over the top, hence cover one. You play that, and you make their receivers beat you man-to-man, and they've struggled to do that.
And there's the psychological component with Tom Brady, which is you've taken his binky, Alex Guerrero, off the sideline, so he's not there. And you don't have Jimmy Garoppolo pushing Tom to be better. Those things are missing, whether they have any...
I don't think he needs Jimmy to push him.
Well, but since Jimmy left, he hasn't been as good.
Yeah, but I think that's also, as I mentioned, like he got injured.
Okay.
So he got injured, and he is missing
I'm
all those guys
saying,
you mentioned.
I'm just telling you.
So, yeah, I'm not worried about that. But I am a little concerned with Brady because I don't think he has all his weapons, and I think he's hurt. And if he doesn't play well, they ask so much of him, and they put so much on him that... I don't want to say it's like our colleague Tara Sullivan said about the Patriots after the regular season finale. It's a house of cards. But if you pull that Brady card out from there, the whole thing might collapse.
Of course. Absolutely. It's fragile. But they are upheld artificially by the lack of competition, and that will see them through.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the AFC, I mean, you know, like I said, it's like Alberto Riveron was reviewing the field and setting it for him and said, no, we're going to take Flacco out, and we're going to put Mariota in. We're going to take Philip Rivers, who can actually throw out, and put Tyrod Taylor in. It's like, you know, it was almost like they were dictating the field, so it's certainly a favorable field for the Patriots. All right, I do want to move on to the Red Sox because I want to get your opinion on this. They've been so quiet. They haven't done anything at this point. J.D. Martinez is out there. Bob Nightingale of USA Today had a report that the Red Sox have a five-year deal on the table for J.D. Martinez. We don't know what the numbers are. Do the Red Sox need J.D. Martinez both for buzz purposes and for baseball purposes?
Well, there's no buzz around the Red Sox. We know that they changed managers right after the season, and that's been it. You know, they re-signed Mitch Moreland, bring in a new craft beer. These kinds of things really aren't lighting up the fan base. So I don't know if they want to do something for the sake of doing something. They have a gap in power. We know that. Martinez, but they're drawing a line here, whether it's luxury tax threshold or not getting stuck on 7 years or the stare down with Boros and Dave Dombrowski. I don't know what it is, but I'm not sure that's going. I don't believe that's going to happen. And I think that this is your team. The team you're looking at now, I think that is your team.
Is that team good enough? I mean, they won 93 games last year. Is that good enough with internal improvement from Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi and Xander Bogaerts?
It's okay. It certainly can contend as long as the Yankees don't get Machado. That would be a deal breaker. If Machado goes to the Yanks before the season, then this thing's over and you start thinking about rebuilding.
Take the money out of it. You know, it's obviously the Globe is owned by John Henry, the owner of the Red Sox. But take the money out of it. Do you like J.D. Martinez as a player? Would you want him here just as a player? It's not your money.
I guess I'd take a shot at him. It's not my money, as you say. But I think that it could be, if they go seven, it could be one of these things they live to regret.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm not really that enamored of this guy. I think he's put up some huge numbers. But if you go back and look at his career, he's really had two incredible half seasons.
Yeah.
In 2015, he had this great first half. And then last year with the Diamondbacks, he had this great second half. And everywhere he's been, he hasn't had to be the focal point of the lineup, which I think he would sort of have to be here. In Detroit, he had Miguel Cabrera. In one of the years, he was really good. Victor Martinez was an MVP candidate, was a 3,100 guy. And then even in Arizona, he has Paul Goldschmidt. So he comes here. It's a little different. You're in the AL East, and people are looking at you as the focal point of the lineup. He's never had to do that in his career.
Yeah, and every time you play the Yanks, you're looking at Stanton and Judge. So it's the comparisons would be tough. His career path, as you say, it's a little bit suspect. I'm not in love with it, but right now it's better than what you got.
Yeah, I would like to see the Red Sox just to do something, just for selfish media purposes, so we had something to talk about, something to discuss. Yeah. It's been a dead offseason this point. But all right, Dan, well, we covered a lot of ground. It was fun. Thanks for coming on Season Ticket. I know you were playing hurt today with your voice, but you sounded great,
Thank you.
I appreciate you dropping some knowledge as always. That's the one and only Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe sports columnist. You can find him on Twitter. He's @Dan_Shaughnessy. All right, that's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you've enjoyed this show, please tell a friend. Remember to leave us a review as well. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be right back.